year-round activity, you know, in the garden. You know, here we are, you know, at the end of the growing season, and in many ways we're putting things to bed and to sleep for the winter and sort of getting ready for the slow season. But we still need to be thinking far, far ahead, because, you know, we talked earlier also about, you know, putting some of the bulb flowers into the ground as well, so that we have nice blooms at the very beginning of spring.
Yeah. And now as well, we can visit the garden center. Some of them will be just closing for the winter.
Yep.
Some of them are on sales. And that is the time as well to get some pansies.
Mm-hmm.
Pansies are these more little plants with flowers over the winter.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we have all our garden beds covered with hoop houses. We just plant some pansies to have some flowers over the winter. So yeah, this is time as well to see what those plants are on sale and try to bring indoors. You still can keep the plants indoors.
Yeah,
but although we are slowly down, we are turning into thinking what went right this year, what it went wrong, and as well try to adjust our way of gardening.
Right.
If I haven't mentioned before, there is no one right way of gardening.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has different ways of gardening, and at the moment we have four different philosophies that leads the gardening. For instance, we have permaculture, we have regenerative agriculture, we have biodynamics,
mm-hmm.
and we have the Perelandra as well. So there are four philosophies, and on top of that, we have like 13 different methods of growing. you might have heard about lasagna gardening, agriculture, raised beds, in-ground plot. And yeah, so there are so many different combinations of techniques, agricultural techniques and philosophies that makes gardening so exciting. So we start with one philosophy and then you move to another, and at the end you just have a combination of all of those.
Fascinating. Perhaps in an upcoming week we can dig in more into these philosophies.
Yeah, sure. That will be something that we can explore.
Excellent.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for dropping by today, Pablo. Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability Society. How do people find more about Embark and its programs?
Yeah, Embark Sustainability Society is based on SFU Burnaby campus, and you can find us in our website, embarksustainability.org, or through our social media channels at Embark Sustain.
Great. Thanks for dropping by today, Pablo.
Yeah.
Talk to you again next week.
See you next week.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Hey, Peter. How's it going?
Fine.
Here to talk about a movie today.
Well, what it was one of the co-architects of SFU, along with Arthur Erickson,
mm-hmm. Jeffrey Massey. Yep.
His father was Raymond Massey, the actor, and he starred in a rather intriguing film from 1936. One of the few science fiction films of the 30s and 40s, and it gets everything wrong, basically. It starts off in 1940.
Well, just before we get into that, just a trivia note that, so we have Jeffrey Massey, and then his father, Raymond Massey, the actor.
Right.
And Raymond Massey's brother, Vincent Massey, was a Canadian politician and ultimately a governor general for Canada.
Well, one thing I found out that Raymond Massey was basically born rich, so on a well-to-do farm in Ontario. So it just goes to show, you get advantages.
Well, yeah, I guess that's how everyone in the family managed to do so well.
Yes.
When you start a leg up, it's easier.
Okay. What it is that Raymond Massey was born in Canada, and the other Jeffrey Massey, he was born in England because Raymond Massey went to Oxford, or a part of Oxford.
Mm-hmm.
And then because The Shape of Things to Come was made in England. It's an English film. Then he went to the United States. Raymond Massey became a citizen of the United States eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think his sons did. They stayed in Canada.
Yep.
Had a bit of a career. So that sort of kind of explains why we got a British movie star with a son who's involved with Canadian architecture and politics and so on. So I'll just outline it, and I'm going to ruin it. Sorry.
I'm going to ruin it. There's going to be spoilers ahead?
Yeah, there's spoilers, but... Yeah.
So the film is the 19... According to Wikipedia, 1936 film, Things to Come, sometimes known as Shape of Things to Come.
Yeah, the odd thing is that I forget which is which, the United States version or the English version, and the United States and Canada version, is that one, the only thing that's altered is that the title says either The Shape of Things to Come or Things to Come.
Yeah.
And that's it, the exact same film.
Like the Harry Potter, first Harry Potter book.
Oh, which I've avoided. Anyway, so it's based on a 1933 novel by H.G. Wells. H.G. Wells did the screenplay. And there's a bit of a changes between the book and the film. So I'll just go on with the outline of the 1936 film. Mm-hmm. And even though I'm ruining it for you as such, I think if you haven't seen this, see it, and you'll find what the visuals kind of interesting. So it comes out in 1936, and the first, and they got really 3 years that they focus on, 1940, 1970, and the year 2036. So we still got time. No, it's not going to happen. We're not going to get what they get at the end of the movie. But so in the 1940 first sequence, Raymond Massey is in it. And they're talking about, well, there's probably going to be a war. And sure enough, at the end of that sequence, there is. And it's a war that lasts for 30 years. It just, and they don't really have a concept, oh, they're like the Germans are Nazis or whatever. It's just a overall war that brings us back not so much the Stone Age but the medieval age, it seems. Right. So the whole world is at the medieval level, and then every little town is run by certain. It's very tribal. Mm-hmm. So Raymond Massey, and this is why it sort of stars Raymond Massey. And so he's a bit older now, 30 years older, yeah. And he's part of these but these airplane people. They've no civilization, and they know the technology of these planes, and they say, we're going to change the earth. It's not going to be you people with your little tribes. We're taking over. And which they do, but they put up a bit of a fight. Of course, this one guy does. So what we have here is a 10-minute sequence, which they just show how they're going to rebuild the entire Earth. And so they have music and sound effects, but they don't have any explanation of what they're doing. Just, you know, the factory here, they're doing mining and so on. And then we go to the year 2036, when it's I don't think there's enough resources on planet Earth to do what they do at the end. But so be it, and they all live underground. Actually, if you do see the film and you go to the Metrotown shopping mall, there's aspects that kind of look like it, like the elevators at Metrotown.
Right.
It has a bit of a look at the Shape of Things to Come. But, of course, there's no calm. It's sort of implied. It's like in the original Star Trek, and the ones falling over that, you don't have, like, a business commerce. Yeah, right. It's sort of like, it's not communism. It never really explained exactly what it is.
The economy is just kind of invisible and works.
Yes.
Right.
And so it's sort of like that. And so what happens is that now we have the great-grandson of the actor that played Raymond Massey.
Yeah.
And he looks kind of, even though there's eight people, if you're a great-grandson, he looks alarmingly like this guy, you know, he's one-eighth of the genetic supply.
Strong genes.
It's the same actor, of course.
Yeah.
And so how the movie sort of ends is that Raymond Massey character sort of says, my son is going to go off into outer space. Now, they haven't gone to the actual moon yet. So we kind of beat them in reality, 1969. This is 2036. They haven't gone to even the moon. And then there's these artistic people saying, no, this is a wrong thing to do. The human race should not go off to the moon and other planets. Yep. But they do. And he had a rather sanctimonious thing about how even though things are dangerous, we must go forward. So there. Have you seen this movie previously?
I think I've seen it, but long, long time ago. You know, not enough to really remember all the plot. And I actually think perhaps I haven't really seen it. I've just seen clips and segments of it. Because, you know, as one of the few serious science fiction films of that era, you know, you're going to, you know, it's kind of got special effects, you know, that were perhaps groundbreaking for the time. So you sort of, you know, one of the reasons you see the sort of clips of that, because, you know, early visions of space flight and other things are shown in the film.
Now, the Metropolis film, which was made in Germany in 1927 by a Jewish director who later went to the United States during the 1930s for obvious reasons, Fritz Lang.
Yep,
he did a silent one set in the year 2000.
Yeah.
Which was sort of groundbreaking there. Mm-hmm. Perhaps even a better film in a way.
Than Metropolis?
Than The Things to Come.
Oh, okay.
And Metropolis is arguably, it's a silent film.
Yeah, I've seen Metropolis.
And then there's actually an obscure one, 1930, which was a musical comedy set in the year 1980, which I've seen clips of. It hasn't been shown because it's sort of a bad film. And then I got so curious about it, and I saw about 10 minutes. But it is sort of odd. It's bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one film that's sort of brought up is a trip to the moon. This is 1902. And what they always say is that The Great Train Robbery, 1903, is the first film which has a storyline. And they always say that's a big break. But they're both short films.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think enough credit is given to A Trip to the Moon, because it's arguably the first film that has an entertainment artistic bent to it.
Right.
Because films before that are interesting because we get to see 1890s.
Well, they're just depictions of life at the time,
yes.
Right? But they're not, you know, they're not new stories.
So this was, but it's a pretty fanciful. Ironically enough, they get one thing right. We did go to the moon, whereas these other ones kind of get things wrong.
But I think in The Trip to the Moon, they use a giant gun to get it there.
Everything's wrong except the fact we eventually
as opposed to a rocket.
So the other thing before The Day the Earth Stood Still, 1951, is the Flash Gordon serials in the 1930s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's basically it for science fiction and film up until The Day the Earth Stood Still. And then the 1950s, they really do a lot of science fiction films. The other thing is that the term science fiction...
I think for the most part, up until, you know, even into the 50s, they were sort of not considered serious films. They were all sort of B-movies for the most part.
Well, there wasn't enough to be B-movies. The adventure serials were a chapter to suck the children in for the to be continued every 50 minutes every day, every week, I mean.
Yeah.
So they were even sub-B, you could say.
Yeah, turned out cheaply.
Yeah, well, they're interesting enough. But the other thing is that the very term science fiction is not coined until 1928.
Right.
And, of course, there is, retroactively, H.G. Wells's in the 1890s, The Time Machine, War of the Worlds.
And Jules Verne as well.
Jules Verne starts in 1860s.
Yeah.
So they are retroactively considered science fiction.
Yeah.
But they are... But the very term is not coined until 1928.
Do you know if they had a term that they referenced those authors in their works by up until that point? Or they just really didn't think of them as that much different from other...
romantic science things.
Yeah.
They really didn't have a term.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that H.G. Wells was pretty well had come up, and Jules Verne had done quite a few works prior to the mm-hmm. term coming up. Yeah. Now, it started out by the by an actual pulp publication.
Yeah.
And this pulp publication had, a year before it became a comic strip, Buck Rogers in the 25th Century.
Yeah.
And this was a major comic strip that the original run of it ended in 1967.
Yeah.
So science fiction was really part of American culture, even though there were not a lot of films doing it. And there's something called pulps. Now, pulps are science fiction came, the term came from pulp publications. Mm-hmm. Now, pulps were like mysteries. They could be a Western. So they're sort of lower grade writing, you could yeah. argue. But the Shadow radio show had a pulp. It's supposedly the Shadow radio show and the pulp don't have the same characters. They sort of are not quite the same thing.
Right.
So, and they sort of ended in 1953 en masse, a lot of the pulps. But they started about the 1890s. And so it was the 30s and 40s that in the pulps a lot of the science fiction came out, including Asimov's the foundation
series. Yeah.
Well, that was originally was in a throughout the 1940s.
It
was
the actual first couple of books are, they're not really a novel in the conventional sense of a single story. They're a collection of short stories that tell a larger story about this future civilization.
Well, they were all done. The original trilogy was all published in the 1940s.
Yeah.
Pulps. And they said a bunch
of individual stories.
Well, kind. I haven't read it.
Yeah, I've read the Foundation series.
Okay, so you
And it's like that. I mean, there are some continuing characters of a sort, in the sense that often the continuing characters are kind of off-screen, so to speak. You know, they're talked about in the stories and stuff. But there are a bunch of individual stories that paint this larger picture of this future world and civilization.
Now, I'm going to talk about a novel by Alf Stapleton that was done in 1930 before H.G. Wells did the novel Shape of Things to Come, which is it's about the history of the human race 2 billion years into the actual future.
Okay.
Kind of, and actually, Alf Stapleton, when he wrote this, did not know the term science fiction.
Right.
But in Star Maker, which is the entire history of the whole universe, 1937, he had become aware of it. So the technique of this book mm-hmm. is that he keeps going faster and faster throughout the years. So he starts at 1930 and gets everything wrong, of course, just like and then he covers more years in less pages as it goes on.
Right.
So there was probably a bit of an influence on even though, of course, H.G. Wells had done stuff, a lot of the very things he's known in the 1890s. I think he was a bit I think even the Isaac Asimov Foundation was a bit influenced by it. Now, Arthur C. Clarke, who did the screenplay for 2001: A Space Odyssey, he acknowledged Stapleton. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I'm going to warn you about this book, Last and First Men, is that there's about one page, which it's a very anti-Jewish segment of it,
right.
which I read it. A few times in the 1980s.
Yeah.
And then the last time I said, I didn't quite see that thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's about a page and it's pretty bad. He actually goes on talking about how the weak should not be kind of permitted to exist and so
mm-hmm.
on. A little bit. So, I mean,
there are definitely certain strains of that in you know, later science fiction writing, like, you know, the pulp era and stuff, if you sort of read in about it, you know, because those attitudes were, you know, out there. And often, you know, science fiction often has a sort of utopian sort of bent to some of the stories, and sometimes that, you know, what goes along with utopianism is the need to get rid of everyone who doesn't fit the utopian vision, which often ends up, you know, particularly in times past when it was kind of acceptable, you know, often fell along racial or gender or other sort of lines that we now recognize to be very problematic.
Well, one thing about it is that they give it the backhanded compliment to the Jewish people that they are very competent in controlling the economy and so on. And it's interesting how he sort of has these other races happening. So we collapse as a race because there's an Americanization of the planet, mm-hmm. and under Jewish economic control, and it kind of just evaporates, collapses. We're back to the Stone Age, and we have another race of people come in, and they have a better civilization or something.
Right.
After, it takes them a while, though.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that the novel of H.G. Wells, the Shape of Things to Come,
yeah.
is a bit different. It goes to 2106.
Mm-hmm.
The other one goes to 2036. I'm looking at the Wikipedia entry of it. Now, what's the movie kind of in an hour and a half covers a whole lot of ground.
Mm-hmm.
What is covered in the novel is that the religious faiths of the world are sort of ended.
Yeah.
And the Jewish people just phase themselves out, supposedly, more so than anybody else. The Catholics put more of a fight to it. The Islam arc. The abomination of Islam is carried out by the air police. So that's how. Who descend upon Mecca and close down the main holy place. Apparently, without major. Incident. I'm just reading what Wikipedia just said about that. And
so in the story, the religions are suppressed.
Well, I mean, they go and bomb Mecca, which
yeah.
So it's because in the movie they just have it like the air. They're in these big, kind of strange planes, and they come down, led by Raymond Massey, and they say we're taken over, and they just have a montage of 10 minutes of. Building stuff,
right?
To the a gigantic Metro Town shopping center. I guess. So see the movie, and then go to Metro Town because there was you know those elevators, the glass ones that go up and down.
Yeah,
it looks a bit like that end part of the movie. So
cool. So I imagine it's available probably on YouTube, eh?
Oh, it's very available. It's very available.
Yeah,
it's so you can just. I think on YouTube, you just put it in, and you'll get a good enough copy. Maybe not the greatest thing in the world, but you'll be able to see it.
Very interesting. A lot of these films, Metropolis, is pretty readily available too.
Yeah.
And probably, what was the other film from Fritz Lang? The other science fiction title you mentioned from a few years after Metropolis.
No, it's not Fritz Lang. It's called Just Imagine.
Okay.
It's it's a musical comedy set in the year 1980.
That would be interesting to check out
sort
their
of
vision.
A rather, I don't know. I don't have the.
Probably no disco music, eh?
No, they don't. Of course, it was the end of disco in the 1980s.
Yes.
So they got something right, I guess.
Yeah.
So.
Well, very interesting. You know, I saw. Metropolis a number of years ago, not that long ago, probably 3 or 4 years ago, as part of a film club thing I was doing. And it was interesting because I guess because it's, you know, an older film, at regular speed, it's actually really quite slow moving. And I found that if there's not a lot of dialogue, so it just doesn't cause a problem. But if speed it up to about 1.5, it got a little more zip.
Were you showing it on 60 millimeter or video?
It was on video. It was on streaming on
oh.
Yeah. Or I found and downloaded a file.
Oh, with streaming. Well, you are younger than me, Magnus, because I remember it was still a big thing to have videotapes. So anyway.
Yep. Well, of course, you know, they released that film back in the 80s with Queen doing the soundtrack.
Which I don't agree with. I don't, because it's not the, I mean, if you're a big Queen fan, why not have something interesting in the background? But yeah. That's more about hearing the music than appreciating the film.
It does, you know, for me, it always felt a little odd because, of course, you have this 1920s film and imagery and then this very 1980s rock and roll music that didn't, to me, seem to work all that great together. So the version I saw had what would have been that was something, it was a sort of an original soundtrack to it. Because, you know, it came out right, it was originally a silent film.
And yes, it was a silent film, yes.
And because it came out right at sort of the in those transition years between silent and talkies.
It was a bit before the jazz singer. It was a bit, yeah. it was 1926. It's also a German film.
Yeah. But there are versions which have been rescored, which you can find.
Well, that's the thing about a silent film. There's almost an infinite way of showing, having the, with the music.
Yep.
And a lot of valid ways of doing it, too.
Cool.
Okay. So.
All right. Great discussion. Things to come or the shape of things to come.
That's it.
You check it out online and a lot some of these other early science fiction films.
Right.
Great stuff. Thanks, Peter.
Okay. It's alive. It's alive. You couldn't stop right. We're on the same side. We have the same sign. Keep it wild. Keep it wild. That's the way to live. It's the way to die. That's the way. That's not punk rock. Seconds left, doomsday clock. Getting your steps in. Sleep with a night guard. Dicking around on your phone. Thanks for sticking around. Is this really all there is? Slipping.
Wandering Rhythms, Mondays from noon to two.
Join us in a weekly sample of music from planet Earth.
The strangest mixtape you will ever hear.
Desert blues.
Balkan punk.
Latin funk.
African psych.
Pigeon rap.
And anything and everything else you can imagine, equally represented by all continents.
Because good music is universal.
Wandering Rhythms.
Mondays at noon on CJSF 90.1 FM.